Hey, it's Delvin. You might know me as the Dark Web from the Long Box Crusade. Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about what you're going to be listening to. This is Come Out to Play. It's a New Warriors podcast based on the 1990s series, The New Warriors. The New Warriors ran 75 issues. And Jared, you might know him as Death Probe, possibly the yard sale artist. Jared and I are covering all 75 of these issues, and we're doing it on YouTube channel. Since we have an awesome DJ in Pat Sampson, aka DJ Cristados, he's gonna take these and he's gonna strip the audio from the YouTube recordings that we do every second Tuesday of the month, by the way, if you wanna listen there. He's gonna take those recordings and he's gonna just give you the audio recording. So if you're a little bit busy, like most people are from time to time, you have an extra opportunity to be able to just listen to the audio. So a little bit of a warning. It's going to be a little bit rough, as you know, some of the things are going to be comments and stuff that happen right in that moment. But you still get to listen to some New Warriors goodness. Have fun. And remember,
New Warriors, come out to play.
Come Out to Play, a New Warriors podcast, is streamed live in front of an internet audience. You can join in on the live stream and chat every second Tuesday of the month on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search for and follow Long Box Crusade.
New Warriors, come out to play.
There we go. We are live here and stuff. By any chance, Corey, you didn't bring anything to clink together, did you?
Oh, my. No, I didn't.
I got it. Don't worry. I have two random things here. It's a coffee mug, and it's my bottle that I drink water from. We got to get it started properly, so hold on. New Warriors, come out to play. See, this is what we get, Jared, when you're not here. We get, you know, low-level production and coffee mug that I have my tea out of, like, before I'm about to go to sleep, and my water bottle here. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Come Out to Play, New Warriors podcast. If you have not already, please hit the like button. If you have not already, please subscribe to the Long Box Crusade Network and get in on all that stuff that we like to talk about. But today we're here to talk about New Warriors. And before we get started, we have a guest here that is not Jared. If you know anything about the podcast, you've seen us live. If you haven't, why not? You should. It's great. But this is Corey from New Warriors Talk. I think I found New Warriors Talk, Corey, on Twitter. You know, just happened to pop up in the algorithm. I started seeing a guy saying like a lot of cool stuff about like a group that I care dearly for. And then New Warriors Talk led to the New Warriors chat on Facebook, of which I was exposed even further to more people that had this fascination. But yours is, if it's not the top, it has to be like just the best, like it has to be top several of the people, because I mean, you celebrate like not only the Warriors one team, but like the other iterations, everybody who's ever been a New Warrior. And actually, because of that, I know today is Angelica Jones's birthday today.
That's right. That's right.
Because of you. So let me officially say welcome.
Thank you.
And I got to ask you a couple of questions because you are new to the show. And the first one, I think I'm really interested to find this out. What was your introduction to the New Warriors?
My introduction to the New Warriors. So my first like comic book ever really that I followed was Transformers. And yes, which I know you have a an affection for as well. And when that was getting ready, it was clear it was about to end. It was ending, getting to the end of the road. And there was, you see the in-house ads and stuff like that, and the bullpen bulletins and things like that. And so I saw I was getting curious about reading superheroes. Like, oh, I should get into superheroes. I kept seeing ads. And I tried a Superman, random Superman issue, and it didn't really land. I wanted to start at the beginning. I didn't want to start at issue 233 or something. And so there in the bulletin was a bit about the New Warriors as one of the upcoming books. And it was part of the Heroes for the 90s line. And so I was like, all right, I'll try them. And it took me a few months to finally find it. I didn't really have a good local comic book store yet, or I didn't find it yet. And so I found, I think it was New Warriors number 9 with the Punisher on it there as my first issue that I got, brand new. And that was it. I was hooked. I just loved their, just the dynamic. I love the character. I love the subplots. I mean, it just, for me, just hit perfect. I was probably the perfect age. Or perhaps mentally developed to the right age. And so I just loved it. New Warriors number 9 was the first new issue I got. And of course, got all the back issues, and I have since gotten virtually every comic book that there is a New Warrior in it in some degree. I have in my back issues somewhere here. So
that is fantastic. Yeah. That means you have a pretty large collection then, right?
Yeah, I have switched to digital, so I don't have the print versions of newer appearances, but up through the middle 2000s to 2010s, I have print issue of every appearance.
That's fantastic.
Of every New Warrior. Yeah.
I have one more question to ask, but I'm seeing a couple of comments that I want to at least mention. Scott O'Neill says a lot of the core folks in the Facebook group go way back to e-groups and Yahoo groups back in the late 1990s. At one point, we even had a group of folks doing a Round Robin New Warriors fanfic.
That's right.
Wow. I am supremely impressed by that. And I wish that I had more access to computers back then. I didn't have a computer in my own personal home until, I was 22, 23. So I missed out on the 90s stuff. There was no computer in my room, which is just crazy now. I couldn't even imagine that. Let's see. Linkovich just says New Warriors 31 is the last new issue I bought as a kid. Didn't come back to the book for over a decade. Man, you missed out, but at least you came back. And hello to everyone else. I don't think there's anything huge other than Trey saying we need to send Delvin some proper bottles just in case. I actually do have proper bottles. I do. They are in my other room. I call it the man room. My wife calls it the comic book room. And because Auburn Elvis actually bought us or made some bottles for us that we've showcased before, I just didn't think to get them. I rely on Jared so much to provide stuff like that. Let's see. Hold on one second. There's also something else I'm forgetting, which is this. Haha, looking almost professional here. I have another question to ask you. And that question is, and I'm sure you, again, this is a question I feel it's almost tailor-made for you, but give us your ideal team of New Warriors and why.
Currently it's the Founders. It's just the Founders. It's the eight. It's the classic eight. The Founders plus Rage and Silhouette. To me, that's what really the book is about. And that's if there were some sort of reunion book or some sort of new series, I feel like every time they try to relaunch it, they're always let's put in more characters and more. And I enjoy those characters. I've come to like them, but to me, the core of the New Warriors is the original six plus Silhouette and Rage, basically the cast that's in, this era that you're covering now is that's to me is first 2 years plus 2 to 3 years is prime New Warriors, peak New Warriors.
The one thing that I will never, ever forget is reading about, I think it was Evan Skolnick, who eventually will take over the book. And he got the book because his pitch was the only pitch that kept the original New Warriors together as a team. Everybody else wanted to break the group up. And it's like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Why would you possibly want to do that, particularly when they were sort of trying to compare it in a sense to DC's Teen Titans. It's like, did anyone ever say that Robin shouldn't be in Teen Titans? Yeah. No, of course not. Why would you? Yeah. They wanted to kill off everybody. To me, that's crazy. So I would, and I will forever hold out hope that one day, because with the exception of Nova, really, and I think they're doing some stuff with Firestar over in the X-Men that I have not gotten to, you could put that team back together tomorrow. Yep. And you could put together intelligent storylines tomorrow. And I just will forever hold out and pray that is the case. Jason Lady, by the way, agrees with you and says those eight are the perfect superhero team lineup. Yeah. So much stuff that can be done with them, man.
I think we saw a glimpse of that too when Fabian and Mark Bagley kind of reunited on that Marvel Comics 1000 or 1001 or whatever that issue was. They did a page of New Warriors, of the original New Warriors, and it was just, you know, it was very quick. It was just a single page, but it's like that's the kind of thing that you could do where they're talking about topical stuff, just as the New Warriors have always done, but in a fun and dynamic and interesting way that's not like talking down to the audience and not like simplifying it. So yeah, I agree. You could bring that group back together, pull some stuff that would feel relevant rather than just like a retro, like, hey, let's just be in the 90s. You know, you can still, those characters can tell stories today and be awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you could even retrofit some of the stories that happen now, put in some more up-to-date lingo, and the stories would still hold. They would be the same stories, which is a sign of a job well done. Scott O'Neill says, Corey likely remembers exactly who it was. Dude has forgotten more about New Warriors than anyone else knew, but one of the proposals back then wanted to deconstruct the team in a massive way, killing most off. And then said, was it Warren Ellis? That sounds like something that Warren Ellis would do.
It was, yeah. Tom Brevoort has posted about this a couple times where, yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure it was Warren Ellis. Although it could have been Mark Miller, but anyway, one of them, their pitch during that era that you were just talking about, it was just kill all of them. And it was actually a joke pitch. He had no interest in doing it, but he was like, oh, whatever, I'll just write this pitch and just be absolutely ridiculous about it. And they actually were like, kind of entertaining it, because he sort of had a little bit of a buzz to him, because he was doing Excalibur and other things. And so it was just like, well, I guess we, you know, and Tom was like trying to kind of work with it. And then, you know, finally it was like, yeah, I'm not serious. This isn't real.
and what's crazy is, I mean, whether that was true or not, he did that later with X-Force.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's true. You're right.
So yeah, maybe there was a little bit of truth to it. So anyway, I should get in our boilerplate before we get too lost just talking about other stuff that's cool, but not germane to New Warriors 31. Come Out to Play is a chronicling of the 1990 series, The New Warriors. The first volume of New Warriors ran 75 issues today, and the mission is to cover all of the first volume. As I rediscover my love for the series, help other people find theirs and share our love and joy with the listening audience. So grab your skateboards, bucket helmets. It is time to play. Today, we're talking about New Warriors issue 31. Cover credits do not go to Mark Bagley and Larry Malstead. I did not change that in the script. Cover credits go to Derek Robertson and Larry Malstead. And we're going to talk about the cover now. Corey, I'm going to hold the cover up. And if you want to describe or talk anything about it, now would be a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll do my best Jared impression. So we've got a black background, New Warriors logo with the red background at the top, but the cover entire solid black, except for we have sort of this frame of we're looking up from inside a grave site or a burial. Where dead people go.
Yeah, great work for me.
And then on the sort of the left, lower left up the wall, it says, "Who mourns the Hellions?" in the very sort of morbid font. And then we see up, as we're looking up, standing over the grave is Firestar, along with from X-Force, Warpath, and Cannonball. And we see the gravesite there, rest in peace. And a little in the lower left corner, there's a little death there is looking at us. And then there's a caption, guest starring X-Force, as you know, in case we didn't recognize who those two people were next to Firestar. Warpath and Cannonball. So I love this cover. This is Derek Robertson's, as you said, his first cover. He's been on the book for about 6 months at this point, but this is his first cover. Mark Bagley had continued to be the cover artist while he was also handling Amazing Spider-Man, and which was at this point in time actually was bi-weekly. So he was doing two issues of Spider-Man, a cover on Amazing Spider-Man, the cover on Night Thrasher for Control, that miniseries, and the covers of New Warriors. So guy was a machine. But yeah, I'm glad actually that as much as I love and adore Mark Bagley and his artwork, I was glad that Derek Robertson got to take over on this as the cover artist, just because he's obviously a little more intimately familiar with what's going on in the story. And so it just feels a little more connected than it had been the last several issues. And I just love just the like macabre sort of feel of this cover and just the mood and the vibe of it. It's just great atmosphere. The only thing, like if I could change one thing, is I would take out the guest starring. It just feels like kind of a mood breaker. Like it's very like dark and kind of gothic. And then, you know, guest starring X-Force, you know, it just feels a little like incongruous, but otherwise absolutely love it. And also in the top corner there, the debut of Derek Robertson's head corner box heads there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love this cover. It's great.
I think it's good. I can understand why they would put in, you know, the guest starring from X-Force, Cannonball, and Warpath in that. I guess they wouldn't want anyone to say, did the team grow a little bit? Are these New Warriors? Which is fair game, right? New Warriors kind of had an Avengers thing going on where they're just like, you know, oh, hey, yeah, you fall alongside us. You're one of us now. So I could see why they put that. And I get the mood of the cover, too. I'm going to mention it on the inside, but I think Derek Robertson draws a fantastic Warpath. So I think anytime like there's like a, you know, a death cover, there's not much you can do about it if you're making it terrestrial, right? Like there's going to be a gravesite, there's going to be people in mourning by the gravesite, there's not going to be any action or fighting, it's just going to be somber. And so I think Derek did the best job that he could capturing that. And I absolutely agree with you as well that Derek should be the one to draw the covers on the book because he's the one doing the interiors. To me, that just makes more sense. Bagley as an absolute trooper, and I respect the heck out of his work, but absolutely it was time for him to put the pencil down for New Warriors and go ahead and start on other matters. Let's see. Got a couple comments. Scott says, I love the cover. Such a horror tone. What's scarier than looking up from the bottom of an open grave, but it doesn't really match the tone of the story. Yeah, I agree and disagree with that, Scott. I yes and no. Linkovich says, I didn't like this art very much. Probably the main reason I stopped reading as a kid. You missed out, man. You missed out. But you came back. That's an important thing. Let's see. Jason Lady, jumping the gun a little bit with the ratings, said, good cover, eye-catching, morbid. I give it an 8. Let's see. Did anyone else have anything to add? Courtney Holland says, could use more color. I rated a 4. And let's see.
I like Matt's comment there, comparing it to EC Comics. That's a great point.
I missed that comment, but thank you for that. And Jason Lady says the head stoner says Hellions, like all 6 of them are buried there or something. I remember reading that storyline and vaguely, I have those issues of X-Men. And maybe it was a shock value thing or whatever, but like the Sentinels and the Reavers just ran through the Hellions. Like,
yeah,
they were gone like that.
Yeah. And some of them you could barely even make out. It was just like, they're gone.
And that story
actually was like maybe a year old at this point. So it is kind of funny that, and the characters, I mean, we'll get to that, I guess, but the characters kind of mentioned that like, oh yeah, we just found out. But it is kind of funny that like, who mourns the Hellions from a year ago? But somebody had to.
Yeah. And I'm glad someone did. It at least gives them a little bit of gravitas. And Trey gives an 8, says, I think it matches the tone, but that burst of yellow takes it down a notch. They could have done something to match the mood. So we already talked about ratings. You and I, Corey, can rate it as well. What do you rate the thing? And going off the script that I'm not even going back to, we do things here, come out to play on a scale of 1 to 10. one being the lowest, 10 being the highest. What would you rate this, Corey?
I really like the mood of it and the atmosphere. I would give it an 8, I think.
Okay. I'm at a 7. I'm not in love with it, but I think it's good. I think that he did the only new warrior on the cover credit in Firestar. He draws a great Firestar in her old costume, wink. And and I like how he draws Warpath, and I like how he drew Cannonball as well. I don't think there's much you can do with a death cover, but I think that they did well. So let's talk about the creative team real quick. I got it because I didn't give you the script, Corey. But you are doing better than I am, trust me. Credits for the issue, New Warriors issue 31, on sale date was November 24th, 1992. Cover date was January 1993. Cover price was $1.25. Story was by Fabian Nicieza. Pencils by Derek Robertson. Inks by Larry Malstead. Colors by Joe Rosas. Letters by Joe Rosen. And editor was Rob Tokar. And thank you to Mike's Amazing World for that. And the title of this book is Ruins. The X-Force members, Warpath and Cannonball, team up with Firestar to go to Nova Roma to find Empath and Magma to tell them the rest of the Hellions were killed by Sentinels. Another mystery unfolds as to why Nova Roma exists in the first place, and we end with Firestar closing the doors on the past while opening the doors to the future. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of our other stuff, Corey, but when it comes to like Amazing Spider-Man Chronicles, I do most of the synopses for there, and I try and write a longer one. I might like weave a song in there, like some song lyrics and stuff. And I thought to do that at first when it came to New Warriors. I was like, no, you know, we do these live, and I think that the shorter synopsis pays off, and it certainly makes it much easier to write, oh, say an hour ago if you were slacking on coming up with script. Anyway, we're going to talk about the story now. So, Corey, we can do this however you like, man. I know we don't have screenshots because that is a Jared thing, but we can discuss any point in the book that you'd like.
Well, great. I like to discuss comics in verse. So I'll be full pentamic. No, I'm just kidding. I have the comic. I have the omnibus here. I also read it originally on the Marvel Unlimited. And I have the original issue somewhere in a box that I can't get to. But I guess I wanted to first call out the opening scene here, which is them arriving at Nova Roma, and I actually had forgotten because it wasn't as evident on Marvel Unlimited, but when I read it on the omnibus, I had totally forgotten that there was this sort of like, you know, vertical kind of, you know, obviously you're normally reading like this, and then you had to turn for the not only this. It's the it's the big reveal of Nova Roma, but then is also the little vertical kind of discussions at the bottom, which I thought was cool. So I'm just loving, you know, Derek Robertson's growth in this series is just amazing to watch. I remember getting the issue 26 and feeling, you know, like, okay, all right, you know, like Mark Bagley leaving was like it was just like heartbreaking, but then Derek Robertson at 26, like, okay, this could work. And then he just leaps and bounds is like, just got so just amazing. But yeah, the Firestar, Cannonball and Warpath, the first time they've spent the three of them, I think, have spent time together since the 80s, I'm sure. Well, I guess if you exclude the previous annual. So the Kings of Pain annual, they hung out. But
right.
But they, you know, they're, you know, Cannonball was like Firestar's first kiss in her Firestar miniseries. And you know, so it's just cool to see these characters back together again. But Amara, I don't think she's ever actually met. So it's kind of interesting just to see these characters kind of coming together at the corners of the New Mutants and the New Warriors. So I just, it was kind of new for me when I was originally reading these comics. I was super into the X-Men. I was just getting into X-Men, and it was at the time of this issue running its Executioner song crossover. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of alludes to that. There's a flashback scene where you see X-Force actually like prisoners of X-Men at the time, basically, but it's sort of, they don't say it directly, but I was, you know, so I was just all in at this point of getting into like the Marvel universe, especially the X-Men corner. And I was thrilled that New Warriors was getting involved with it. So, so seeing these characters interact, learning about their relationships that I was still learning about, didn't really know, and getting, and Firestar, I think getting a spotlight was really overdue. I've seen Fabian kind of comment on this. I think he even commented it in a letters column in the series at the time, but I kind of felt like Firestar only got so much focus on her directly rather than her in relation to somebody else. And so
what is that called? Like not fully, but like, what is it? Bechdel test? Like,
where, yes, right. Yes.
Right. Where two women are supposed to have a conversation about literally anything else other than a man. And, yeah, right, and, right. And so I do get what you're saying. And I would get what Fabian's saying. So there were several things in this issue that I did like about just Firestar and her development. And it made me smile towards the end, which we haven't talked about yet, but I'll at least show the page. Let's see, at end of 1992, I was 15 years old. And so it was cool seeing people grow and adapt and change. And that ultimately is like, if there's a grand takeaway of the book, it's like, why would they even go back and mention anything about the Hellions? If you wanted to specifically focus it on anything that had to do with the New Warriors, well, what was it, issue 9 or 10? The teams fought. And the reason why the teams fought was because Night Thrasher went poking around in the databases of the White Queen, and White Queen didn't like that. And so that linked them all together. But the whole thing has kind of been about Firestar and how she attached herself and how she behaved in the past. Very almost prim and proper, definitely reserved. Jared, who's commenting now in the comments, he's not feeling well, by the way. And I hope you feel better, my friend. Jared's mentioned before about like the, you know, potential that Firestar has, where he believes that Fabian is going to basically make her his Phoenix. And I kind of smile at that because like I kind of see that. And we got to see a little bit of it in this issue, where there are several times where she just came across as a complete badass.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, she handled sacred X-Men characters. You can't, you know, in the 90s, the X-Men are unbeatable. They're you know, they're the moneymakers. They're on top. They are the breadwinners for Marvel. And so, you know, for me, I've always felt like a little bit of an underdog kind of thing from the New Warriors, that I felt like, you know, mm-hmm. I was the only one reading it and that sort of thing at the time. And so seeing her interact with the X-Force, the big hot book, two characters, and then not only that, but also have her fight them and not only hold, I mean, she held them off. I mean, not only two X-Force characters, but two other characters. And so she also used her power in a new way that she hadn't used before, which blocked Empath's powers. And she, mm-hmm. he has taken control of her before, and way back in her, in the 80s, in the Uncanny X-Men, her first appearance there. And so, you know, it's interesting that she definitely has the most like leaps and bounds that she is making with her powers among the team, and has the hugest potential. And I think in the next story arc as well, you see again her kind of really let loose, not to spoil. But so I think it is cool to see. I hear what you're saying as far as, yeah, like I started reading X-Men after, like we said before, like they died. that was my first exposure to the, well, I guess New Warriors 10, and then they died. So I really had not much. I have since read, you know, more stories about them and like them a lot. But at the time, I was like, who are these people? Why does Firestar care? Why do we care? And I don't know if that got across. It maybe could have gotten across better why we care. Or why she cares, rather, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I think it's also kind of interesting too that her. So there's the there's ways her powers are growing that she's conscious of, that she's controlling. And then there's this way, which is that she was blocking his powers without realizing it. And to me, that's about that different, that distinction of her growing and gaining her independence and her strength as a character. She's, like you say, she's reserved, she's shy. She comes from a very, you know, she moved around a lot as a kid. Her father, I think there's maybe been one like partial reference to Firestar's mother. We've never known what the deal is. Like, did she leave? Did she die? What the deal is? She had her grandmother that she loved dearly. She died, and she felt it was up to her to take care of her father, who later then had a heart attack. And, you know, there's all these things of her being the caretaker, her being the one to put others first instead of herself. And so it's, I think, like, important for to see the character get like her legs under her and be her own person. And I just wish there was more of that, but I like that we saw it here.
And I think it's an important thing, not especially for a teen book, and not only for a teen book, and also if you're going to be, I'm a big fan of character development. Like, one of the things that's forever annoyed me about the character Iceman is Iceman is an Omega level mutant and they treat him like a clown. And it baffles me to where like the things that he could do are so ridiculously off the charts. It's almost like people are afraid to like to deal with it. And it's like, well, you know what? Kill the character off then if you're not going to do something with him that's befitting what he is. Similar to what they did with Invisible Girl, now Invisible Woman, to where like they sort of like, oh, she's kind of cute and she can like, I can nudge things, whatever. Then someone actually thought about it and said, do you actually realize the things that she can do if she could do those things? She is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And she is. So it's cool to see Firestar coming into her own. Few comments. Don't want anyone to think I forgot about them. Jason Lady mentioned Corey, good memory with Sam being Firestar's first kiss. That's a fact that gets forgotten about, kind of like Beast and Dazzler having been an item at one point. I didn't know that about Beast and Dazzler.
I chose to not remember that one.
Scott O'Neill says Firestar's star was definitely rising at the time, too. She was brought into the Maximum Carnage storyline and was even included in the Sega game based on that story, which was hugely popular. Matt Passo says, always happy to see more Firestar getting in focus since I've been a fan since Spider-Man and his amazing friends. Let's see. And Trey Black says, Firestar is what drew me to the book. I remember her from Spider-Man and his amazing friends, and then I saw Nova and had to pick it up. I want to mention that I think Fabian gave a couple of outs as to why Firestar was not taken by Empath. One, it was a thing that had happened to her before, and I can imagine being somewhat immunized, I guess, if you've been, you know, touched by an empath that way. Then they also mentioned that, like, look, like, every one of us knows what's going on. Like, there's something weird going on here. It probably has to do with empath, but like, I'm not a big dumb lunkhead guy, so I might be able to figure out. He used that and then used the whole she's gaining more control over her powers, and that something with the, you know, electromagnetic spectrum with the enzymes that coagulate and stuff are interfering with the telepathic suggestions that Empath has. So he covered his tracks in a few different ways, so that's cool.
The sort of comic book science there of just like, it's on the same wavelength. Yes, microwaves and telepathy. It's like a radio dial. Oh, we just landed on the same channel, you know. you know, it's like, sure, okay, fine.
Let's see. I shouldn't get into this, but Scott O'Neill also says, Touched by an Empath, the lesser known spinoff of Touched by an Angel. Didn't do so well in test audience. Says, and Jared says, Scott types faster than me. It's because you're sick, Jared. You should log off now and just rest. Get better. So we've talked about Firestar and her amazing development over the book. Actually, we haven't gotten to all of it, but is there anything else that you want to discuss?
Well, we could talk about the subplots, which is, you know, the lost art of subplots. One of the things I adore about this book is just how brilliantly it weaves these subplots in and builds them into like the ape story. And so we get a little date with Nova and Laura Dunham. And they met in the annual that preceded this, a backup story, and they do a cute little thing that is hilarious because they sort of had to change it for censor reasons. So they do they open the cookies, the fortune cookies, and then they read it. And the thing is really in bed is what I always heard, you know, like you read the thing and then you end it with in bed, but that was a little too risque. So they hit the in love, which is kind of like, doesn't quite work. But it's still fun to see Nova dating and also like beating himself up that he like doesn't have enough money and he's not able to actually pay for the date, and she comes from money and is easily able to pay for it. And so there's a little bit of like emasculating, I think, kind of thing for him. And but it's just cool to see like that blossoming, and that's going to be a relationship that'll be, you know, that's fun to watch.
Yep, that one's going to be around for a minute. That's not too much of a giveaway. I think I'll talk more about it at the end because, I'll do that. Like, you know, because Laura Dunham has a story arc within the New Warriors, and that's not a spoiler saying that. And now, because I won't say how it ends, I will say that it made sense how it ended in a sense because, like, Nova right now is like, man, I got to find a way to get money, you know, and Laura does not know that Rich Rider is Nova. So there's that super hero identity element that's in there as well. So a few interesting things going on. There was a storyline as well with Rage and Speedball.
Yes. Yes. So that was fun to watch. First, I just adore their friendship. And we're seeing just more of that continue to grow. I just love how they like sincerely act as kids. So, you know, before Rage arrived, Speedball was the youngest. So he kind of had to like, he was of course still the goofball, but you know, he still had to like try and maybe be a little bit more grown up. And now that Rage is here, who's younger than him, they get to just like goof around and like, and they just are totally just connecting. But before they actually get together, there's a little bit of a drama with Robbie Speedball with his parents, where he's having to make the decision that they're divorcing, and he has to make the decision of which parent he's going to live with. And of course, he picks his mom because they get along better. She also happens to live in New York City, which happens to be closer to the New Warriors. So it's sort of like everything lines up, and the father is a little hurt by it. And just that whole subplot of Robbie's parents, which has been going on for a while now, and we just kind of keep checking on it sporadically. And I just have always loved how that's been handled. You know, this kid who's a total goofball, and he's going through this really hard thing of his parents splitting up, and he's having to try to figure out how to handle that. And he doesn't really share it with the other team much, you know, which is like too bad.
That's true. He doesn't. And I can imagine that maybe he was embarrassed by it, or maybe he just felt as at the time he was the youngest person on the team that's not something they wanted to hear the team goofball talk about. So it's interesting. He absolutely did open up to Elvin, to Rage, about what was going on. And Rage, of course, does not have his parents. And I don't know if they ever explained that in Avengers or not. He lives with his grandmother.
Yep.
So, like, he doesn't even have his parents. So, like, they have that bond already together. And so it is cool to get to see them interact like they did. The only other thing that really came of that, well, two things, actually. One was Rage did some searching, and they still can't find Silhouette.
Yep. Yep.
She just seems to have up and disappeared.
Yeah, somewhere between the sort of the Trans-Sabal flashback scenes of last issue and the scene set in the present of last issue, she vanished, and they still haven't found her. And you know, I think when I was reading this at the time, you know, in many ways, New Warriors kind of like were doing things that you just weren't really seeing in other team books. At least I hadn't seen it, and so. You know, the fact that a main character would just, oh yeah, you're going to jail. And then now a main character is missing and not back the next issue. You know, like I was thinking like, okay, she's missing, you know, it's established the last issue, she's missing, she'll be back this issue. Nope, no sign of her whatsoever. Just but they hadn't forgotten her and they're still looking for her, but no idea where she is. I was like, oh, wow, where is she? What's going on?
Yeah, they did a very smart thing to where, like if this were a TV show, you know, like maybe they would have like something and showing her like in the background very faintly or being taken away or something like that. But it's been long enough. I haven't read the next storyline that I can't remember exactly what happened to Silhouette, even though I know that it's coming up next issue. So Fabian did a very good job of putting an air of mystery behind it. Like at this point, this has been about 3 or 4 months straight that they've mentioned that Silhouette is missing. She's missing. Okay, we're looking for her. We're kind of worried about her. So it looks like that's finally something that's going to come to a head. A couple comments got added about Speedball. Says Robbie's mom accepts him for who he is. His dad, Aspiration 27, is still not really doing that. I've said it before, but that whole dynamic is such a parallel for a coming out story. That is true.
Robbie has shown like his authentic self, you know, like that as he feels that he is to his mother. And she has absolutely just embraced it. And is like, okay, great. Here's how this is the way it is. And for her, for his father, it's like it's the antithesis, which is, you know, I love it because it's maintaining what Ditko established, which is that Robbie's parents are, you know, Steve Ditko loves his binaries. And so the parents are on either side of the spectrum here, where one is absolutely like, yes, free love, creativity, and all that stuff. And the other is no rules and structure. And so superheroes are bad. And so, yeah, of course, one loves superhero. It was totally fine with him being a superhero. Not totally fine, but she accepts it. She allows it.
Right.
The other is doesn't. I love that too. That's a great cause, Scott. Absolutely.
Got a couple more comments. Trey mentions the Speedball racing is kind of like a Blue Beetle Booster Gold type vibe, of which Jason Lady agreed. Says it's cool to see the two young guys bonding. It makes complete sense. I miss their friendship. And then Scott said, or a Cyborg Beast Boy thing, but both have Beast Boy personalities. And Jared adds, Booster Beetle is such a Hope Crosby vibe that works well in books like this. And I just showed how old I am inside. No one knows what you're talking about, Jared. Hope Crosby. You're making up names. Let's move on. Let's see. We talked about the...
Oh, well, so the other thing that was revealed with that is the base, their headquarters, has a mystery 5 floors below them. They which is a weird because I thought they were on like... Aren't they on like the shore, like on the docks there of the... Aren't they like...
They are.
Water? Wouldn't there be water there? So, yeah, there's a little mystery there. What's going on under their own headquarters?
Yeah. And that's yet another storyline where I'm interested in seeing where that's going to go because... Thrash kind of gave him that crash pad and then it's like, okay, I'm going to be off doing my own thing now. Bye. And that's it. So it does stand to reason that he did not have time to walk them through it and say, oh yeah, there are 4 other floors of this thing that you guys can spread your wings out. And instead they've got, I think Nova is living there.
Yeah,
you know, with like, you know, boxers and, and socks and sheets of boxes everywhere. So
just a dorm room.
Definitely worth adding that crash pad is a little bit bigger than they thought it was going to be. Have we forgotten one? Have we forgotten?
Let me do a little flip through here. And I did, by the way, the Speedball scene. I love him. There's a full page there of him.
Oh, yes.
Upside down. I can show that. But yeah, him jumping out into the city, a little photo reference background there, but great Speedball there, jumping around. Derek,
looking at that picture, okay. If anything, maybe Derek drew him a little bit more muscular than he is.
Oh yeah, maybe.
I don't care. That is a fantastic. That's a fantastic picture of Speedball. Since we're talking about fantastic pictures, like I love just the opening page. As soon as I saw that opening page, I was like, oh, okay. Because it makes me wonder why Derek didn't get a run on X-Force because he drew a great Warpath. He drew a great Cannonball. Well, I think at the time, Greg Capullo, as he is wont to do, was on the book for like 80,000 issues. Like, he stayed on X-Force forever and did a fantastic job.
Yeah, no way. That looks great.
But that would be a reason why Derek didn't get a chance. So let's see. You like, you're about to say something.
I was just reading Jared's comments. I hope you feel better, Jared. He's stepping out.
Yeah, he's not doing so well.
Being in this podcast, you know, such a shade that I considered keeping the mustache, but my wife probably would have objected. She is anti-mustache.
My wife's anti-mustache too, actually. she tolerates the beard. She hates just the mustache, though. Hates it.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but all right.
Me neither. You know, some mysteries aren't meant to figure out. All right. Let's see. Hold on. Let's see. Did we miss anything? We haven't talked about the mystery of Nova Roma, but I'm going to be honest. I don't really care about the mystery of Nova Roma.
Yeah. So I didn't know this at the time, because again, I didn't know much about this whole New Mutants world, but apparently, like, hardcore X-Men fans kind of hate this issue because it retcons what was initially established in New Mutants. And then I think later the retcon is retconned. And so, I personally have no, it makes sense to me. I mean, like, it was always a little bit goofy. Like, yeah, there's just this Roman civilization that hasn't developed, aged, or tried to communicate to the home country at all. And so I felt this kind of like justified that and it made sense of that. Celine is kind of who's an X-Men villain. It's kind of funny that she's like a villain that never appears in this issue, but she had a spell over the whole community and then left, and the spell is wearing off. And so Empath was trying to use his powers to like keep the reality in place, and Firestar breaks it, and now everybody knows, oh, I'm not a Roman gladiator or whatever, and Alison Crestmore or something like that. So Magma is not who we thought she was, and so I think that rubbed some longtime fans the wrong way, which I get. But anyway, that's that. Yeah,
I get it, sort of, but it's like, I don't know. I won't say I didn't care about the storyline overall, because that's not true, but I would say that, like, let me ask you this question. Do you think Empath was justified in doing what he did?
No. I get where he's coming from, because from him, this was like his protected little world. The first place it sounds like that he felt like he fit in and was welcome. And so he was threatened and he wanted to protect that. But ultimately that's a selfish thing to do. And you're also, you know, forcing a city to live a lie. And so I think that's probably not a great idea. And so I think it was wrong what he was doing.
Yeah. In my opinion, I agree, by the way, it would be one thing if you were trying to preserve something that was, I don't know, good, wholesome,
right?
Like, Selene created this city out of complete selfishness. Like, I'm creating a Roman city in the middle of a jungle just because I am powerful and can do that. And yeah, I'm going to kidnap people and force them to live out this fantasy. Okay, none of that sounds good. And so for Empath to see this situation and decide, hey, I'm going to continue this ruse and go along with it, it just seems like you're, you know, adding a hat to a hat that was on top of a Batman. Let's see. We had a few people talk about the retcon. Jason Lady says, I couldn't stand this retcon. It took a far out fun comic book concept and made it pedestrian. I don't even remember the original thing that happened, because I'm not that steeped in New Mutants lore. I only knew New Mutants towards the end when Nicieza and Liefeld took over. And I knew nothing about the past for the New Warriors. Scott says, I'm torn on this one. On the one hand, Fabian's story makes far more sense of the whole Nova Roma thing, which was really absurd, but it wasn't a New Warriors absurdity. It kind of felt like it wasn't the New Warriors' place as a book to fix another book's stupid story. It's not like the New Mutants were coming back anytime soon, Scott, even though I think there's been a few more volumes of the New Mutants. but that's it. I hadn't read them, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I mean, Fabian was writing X-Men, you know, one of the major X-Men books, and X-Force, and so, which was, of course, the successor to New Mutants. And so, you know, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a fair point. I agree that New Warriors was not the place to do it, but the writer, I think, you know, like, you know, it's like, it's fair. He was writing like half of the X-Men line at this point, basically. So,
and successfully, those were successful books. So I'm glad that you mentioned that point, because I would have been inclined to just agree and say, yeah, why did he mess with that stuff from the New Mutants? Well, not only because some of the New Warriors tie into it, but also Fabian has clearly done his homework, and he was writing X-Force and adjectiveless X-Men at the time, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. The only other thing that I think is worth mentioning is the very end. After the conclusion of everything that happened in Nova Roma, Firestar thought it best to turn the page. And these are actually some of my favorite pages of the book. One, it was really, really cool seeing that Firestar went to a teammate and asked her for help. That teammate was named Narita. freaked out in just the best way. Like, what? You're going to let me change your look? Oh, heck yeah. Let's do this. And so they came up with Firestar's new costume, which I think is pretty doggone snazzy. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that scene too. That was a great moment in the book. I think everyone talks about Speedball and Rage's friendship, but not enough people talk about Firestar and Namorita's friendship, which is, I think, a lovely thing. Like, you know, this scene highlights it wonderfully. They just get along great. So it was a funny moment. Great thing. You know, Firestar's costume comes from the cartoon, the amazing Spider-Man, His Amazing Friends, which, as you mentioned, happens to be the anniversary of the pilot episode where Firestar debuted on TV. And, you know, it's interesting because the sort of general consensus of that show has evolved so much. When in the 90s, most of the people that were writing and the older, you know, anybody basically who's older than us reading at the time, from what I have seen and read, had hated that show. They felt it was goofy. Mm-hmm. It was silly. You know, the dog is dumb. You know, there was a lot of this isn't how you do superheroes. And, you know, so the cartoon debuted in 1981. And by then, you know, I mean, you know, the history, I don't know how, this is probably getting excessive, but, you know, like, comic book fans, superhero fans particularly, had two or three decades of like post-Senate hearing people hating comic books and thinking they're dumb, they're for, you know, illiterates, and they're just stupid junk media, and believing that comic books could be better, could be more, could be taken seriously. And so, and then this, you know, this cartoon was just like one more, like, oh, look, superheroes are goofy. And so, you know, it wasn't like Batman 60s series, but it wasn't helping the great argument. And so I think there was, a little resentment to the character. And I think, I mean, my personal theory, which could be totally made up in my head, but my theory is that that's why it took so long to be migrated from the cartoon to into the comic books. There's a sort of like, she's comic book people didn't create her. She's in that stupid cartoon. I don't care. And so, so I think that costume and her getting this new costume is kind of a big deal, because it really moves the character forward and really is saying like, yeah, this character is evolving, dynamic, and as rich and as satisfying as any other character in the Marvel universe. And so, you know, and here she is, and here's her own new costume. So I have, you know, very little fashion sense. So I always feel awkward chiming in on whether a costume is good or not. But as far as like what it represents for the character, I thought it was very cool. And I love whenever costume changes are anchored in a character's growth or motivation, rather than just like, I'm wearing this costume now, because the artists liked it better. You know, like, so I liked it for that. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. You have to give a reason. Like, I'm a big Spider-Man guy, and a huge Spider-Man guy, actually. I wouldn't like it if he just put on a new costume and they didn't even explain why.
Yeah.
You've got to have some sort of motivation. Like, the costume that he's wearing, at least in the last Amazing Spider-Man that I've been reading, is almost the same as the original, but it's, you know, some slight modifications because Norman Osborn actually is the one who created the costume for Peter in present run. But it's cool, like, when they attach it to something like this. And if you think about it, it just made perfect sense after everything that Firestar had gone through. Like, she had just shown in just the best way possible. Like, I mean, that scene that she had with where Cannonball was on her tail. And she's like, well, I can't outrun him, but I can outmaneuver him. I had him run straight into Warpath. It was brilliant, though. It showed what a great tactician she'd become. And then once they got past all of the Nova Roma stuff, she's like, you know what? It's time for me to move on from my past. And what better way to show that as a superhero than to change the costume? I'm the same as you, Corey. I'm not the hugest fashion person at all. But it's kind of like art, right? I don't know art, but I know what I like. And I like this costume. It kind of just speaks to, it was somewhat 90s, but it absolutely was all Angelica Jones, because it showed that, you know, she just burst out and it kept the fire motif going on without, you know, being too over the top about it. Just everything about it was very good. It was really, it was cool. And I definitely appreciated the moment between Angelica and Namorita too, because I liked that. I don't think if they had any arguments in the book, it was never just stupid cattiness.
Yeah.
I mean, which is, to be fair, everybody has someone that they just don't like and they're kind of catty towards for whatever reason. But sometimes that's a woman trope that is just boring, to be honest with you. And I don't think Fabian ever went there with them, just having them snipe each other, or even worse, because we mentioned Bechdel test, having them snipe over either. Oh, this is my man. No, this is my man. No, I couldn't imagine a single scenario where Namorita would ever go after Marvel Boy. Ever. And I couldn't imagine a scenario where Angelica Jones goes after, I could say it, Rich Rider. I don't see it. It actually just doesn't make sense. So all of that added together makes it better. You look like you had something to say.
Well, I mean, I absolutely agreed. You know, they're not, the Archie gals. I think this scene, the one thing I kind of wish was done was that I wish that it showed Firestar picking the costume. So I love Namorita. It's very funny and fun of Namorita just throwing a bunch of stuff at them and then describing it. And, you know, she's covered in like a million different things. I love that bit. But I wish there was the moment of Firestar saying, no, this is my costume, rather than another character saying, this is your costume. So we kind of didn't actually see which way it ended up going. I don't think. I'd have to look. But I remember it being either ambiguous or just Namorita being like, yep, that's the one. So, you know, I just wish it was like her, again, just giving her, I think her character just needs her own like voice and like her doing possible, because she's so seldom done that.
I got you. I'm going to read a few comments from some folks that talked about the costume itself. Scott says, one of the things I like about the Nita Firestar friendship is that it reminded me of the classic Namor Android Human Torch friendship, but they can get to the friendship without destroying New York first. And he says, I'm in a minority, but that is my least favorite Firestar costume. To me, it looks way too much like Speed Demon's costume, which makes me wonder how it got in Anita's closet. That's funny. And Jason Lady says, it's my favorite Firestar costume, even better with the jacket with the blazing star in the back. And Tony Pennington said, everyone had those damn safety goggles. It makes sense, though. Like, she's flying. What if a bug hit her in the eye? I agree with that.
You need that bit of realism sometimes. You have to be careful.
All right. Let's see. I think we have covered everything that we need to cover in the book. And so in that case, we, before we rate the book, we're going to talk about Ultimate Warrior, Ultimate Worrier. Like, what character in the book, Corey, do you think was the Ultimate Warrior in the book?
I mean, yeah, Firestar. I mean, it's her. This is really her story. She took care of business. You know, she was the one who took out the two X-Force members and Empath and Magma, and mm-hmm. broke the spell over the city, freed everybody, gave them their own lives back and their own identities back, and in doing so, closed a chapter on her book of her life and said, "Okay, now I've been associated with the Hellions. I've been, I've been wearing the costume that my abuser gave me for too long. Mm. It's time for a new look." And so I absolutely her.
I don't think I could say that any better. I agree. I think it is Angelica. She absolutely kicked butt. She kicked butt last issue, but she kicked butt again this issue, even stand alone without the majority of her teammates by her side. And Ultimate Warrior, who are you worried about the most?
Silhouette. Where is she? What's going on? Why?
Yeah. We're in agreement. I want to know what happened. And I'm looking forward to the next few months because I know that Forces of Darkness, Forces of Light, which we're about to, I'll mention in my conclusion, but I know that went more than 1 month. I know that much. And so what happened to Silhouette is a complex story and one that, to me, I believe, even though Fabian has been coming into, not Fabian, Derek has been coming into his own, if I remember correctly, he really shone through a lot in these few issues that are coming up. So looking forward to that greatly. And now with that, we can rate a few things. Matt Paso added that the Warrior was Firestar. The Warrior was Nova. He's got to get a job and quit jumping from date to date. I mean, he had that 90s pretty thing going on, right? He had the New York thing. He had the long hair and the stubble. Like, surely he could just keep jumping from date to date. Anyway, Scott added a comment about Firestar, saying, has she ever picked her own costume? Emma gave her the yellow body condom. Jeez. Nita gave her the Speed Demon special. Pym gave her the Avengers look, and then she went back to her OG. I don't even remember going back to her OG, but that's later on in the X-Men stuff, I believe. So you can correct me on that later, Scott, if I'm wrong. Matt Paso says, Warrior, Firestar, Warrior, Nova. I already mentioned that. Jason Lady says, Ultimate Warrior. Firestar was sure the hero of this issue and embarks on a new phase of her superhero career. And Jason adds, Warrior, yeah, poor Silhouette, where's she at? We're about to find out, but we're also about to find out. Ratings. New Warriors 31. Corey, what would you rate it?
I think I would put this at a 7. I enjoyed it. It looks fantastic. It's a great spotlight that, as I said, is overdue. But there's a few things that I wish, is debatable. Like, is this a New Warrior story to tell? In part because of the connection to Firestar, I think it is. But did she have enough sort of like ownership over her narrative at the end? So, yeah, like it a lot. I'll give it a 7.
Okay. I'll give it an 8. I thought the story was good. I don't have that tie into the New Mutants, so I frankly don't care about the Nova Roma thing, but I can understand why people don't want to discount anyone else's thoughts on New Mutants. I just never got into it. Not to say that I will not at some point in the future, but just standalone as a storyline, I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed that Fabian used something from New Warriors past that was the fight that they had with the Hellions and connected it to what's going on today to move Firestar and the team into the future. So I thought that was a really good job. Matt Paso enjoyed it even more. He gave it a 9. Jason Lady says, I give this issue a 6 because that retcon gives me heartburn. By all means, please take some Tums, Jason. We already got Jared out. We don't need somebody else hurt. Everybody, that is it. That's the episode. Please come back and join us for the next episode where we discuss New Warriors 32, where the new Warriors begin the Forces of Darkness, Forces of Light storyline. And if you'd like to hear more from us, Long Box Crusade, we're everywhere, y'all. Longboxcrusade.com. You can find us most podcasters to include Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Twitter/X. You can find us Longbox Crusade, Facebook, Instagram, Longbox Crusade, Patreon. You can still join up for only $1 a month, folks. I think it's $3 a month for anything that starts after a certain point. But we're OG. If you want to join us and come and be a part of Crusaders Club, $1 a month will get you there. YouTube, you can subscribe, recorded and live content that's there, posted, updated at least a couple of times a week. And you can email us at contact@longboxcrusade.com. There's normally a banner going across. I didn't bring it up, my fault, but 707-532-5269. That is 707-532-LBOX if you want to leave us a voice message about this show or any of the other shows. Corey, thank you so much for coming, dude. I hope that you enjoyed yourself. I enjoyed having you. And if you like to tell us where you can be found on the internet or anywhere else, now's your time.
Well, thanks so much. I have gushed to you in private how much I think this podcast is just wonderful. So I am thrilled to be a part of it for just a moment. So thank you. I can be found pretty much on any social media platform at New Warriors Talk. And then my site, the New Warriors Continuity Conundrum. If you are looking to buy back issues of every single New Warriors ever and ever, every time they appear in a single panel, maybe just their eyeball in the background, you can go to newwarriors.wordpress.com and read many things. So that's me. Thanks so much.
This man knows his new Warriors. I am the novice of the two of us here, but it makes me happy that I had the idea of doing this. It made me happy that Jared wanted to come on with. And the second order effect of that is that I found a new Warriors community. And that has been something that's been really cool to go to and see, like, people like Corey just having an appreciation for a great group of characters. And I would hope, because there's even people like Fabian Nicieza, who's been on the show, Derek Robertson, who I would love to have on the show at one point, just need to ask the question, Evan Skolnick. A lot of people are there, too. And it's just been awesome seeing a group of people together talking about things that they love, which is something that should be occurring more often in this world, but I digress. You can find me on Twitter at @DE_REY1977. Delvin Ray on Instagram if you care to look for me there. Once again, thanks to everybody for coming in and listening. I didn't get to a ton of comments, I don't feel, but I just wanted to say thank you all so much for coming in and having a chat with each other and just continuing just to grow a positive community. Thank you all so much for that. I'm truly humble and appreciative of that. And see y'all next time. Be a hero to somebody, even if it's just to yourself. And until next time, hold on. I know it's low production, but I still got to do it. We got to have a send-off. New Warriors, come out to play. Y'all have a good night, everybody. New Warriors, come out to play.
Intro music is provided by musical genius Joe November.
Check out his SoundCloud @JOSEFLIN99. You won't regret it.